Chapter 7. Busted. The progress of the Carter-Cash relationship could be charted through the music they made together. Just before June and Kilgore wrote Ring of Fire, she and Cash arranged and adapted The Legend of John Henry's Hammer, recording it in June 1962. Later that month, he cut the first Cash Carter song, The Matador, as well as one he wrote with June's father Ezra, Who Kept the Sheep. A month later, he was special guest for a day-long Carter family album session. Vivian first became aware that something was happening on June 15, 1962, when Cash made his debut at the prestigious Hollywood Bowl in a show that Saul Holliff billed as the first giant folk, western, bluegrass spectacular. It featured Cash with the Carter family, Johnny Western, Merle Travis, Stuart Hamblin, Patsy Cline, Gene Autry, Gordon Terry, Roger Miller, Flatten Scruggs, and others. Vivian dressed up the girls in their Sunday best and went along with Roy and Carrie Cash. We all went backstage after the show, says Kathy Cash. I'll never forget it because Mom had brought it up often since. We were standing there waving goodbye to Dad, and he kissed us all, got into his car, and then June, with Luther and Marshall, jumped into the car right next to him and waved to us. Mom was furious. Her and Grandma were fit to be tied. That was when she started falling apart. There was naturally a lot of guilt involved in the relationship. June felt guilty that she had already been through two marriages. In fact, she felt so guilty that when she divorced Nix on the grounds of irreconcilable differences, she waited weeks before she told her parents. Cash felt guilty about his adultery and the fact that he was deserting his children in their formative years. Drugs and drink helped dull his conscience and curb his fretting, but June was already doing her best to stop his drug habit by searching his pockets and relentlessly discussing his problem. In November 1963, Cash recorded Understand Your Man, a vitriolic song directed at Vivian and set to a tune borrowed from Bob Dylan's Don't Think Twice. Don't call my name at your window as I'm leaving, 'cause I won't even turn my head. And don't send your kinfolks to give me no damn talking, 'cause I'll be gone like I said. You say the same old thing that you've been saying all along. So just lay there on your bed and keep your mouth shut till I'm gone. No, don't give me that old familiar crying, cussing moan. Understand your man. Oh, understand your man. I remember lying in bed listening to them fight in the middle of the night, says Kathy. And I would think, oh boy, this is tiring. Every time he came home, I would beg to go and spend the night at Grandma and Grandpa's house. My mother thought it was terrible that my dad would come back and I'd want to leave, but it wasn't because he was around, but because I was tired of hearing them fight in the middle of the night and keep me awake. Cash clearly felt that he was a misunderstood man, that Vivian not only didn't understand the demands of his work, but couldn't accept his mercurial artistic temperament. June, on the other hand, he felt loved him for who he was. Being on the road was second nature to her because she had known no other life. She not only knew who all his musical heroes were, but she had met and worked with them. And, most important of all, she tended to be strong in exactly the points where he was weak. She was extroverted, steadfast, and abstemious, whereas Cash was introverted, unstable, and indulgent. June was a very basic person, says Harold Reed, who joined the Johnny Cash Show as a member of the Statler Brothers in 1964. She didn't drink. She didn't do drugs. She came from pretty much the same stock that the rest of us came from, but she was strong enough, as we were, not to do these things. John saw that strength in her, and she was able to help him. In the long run, he had to do it himself, but she gave him the strength to stand up on his own feet. June's roots also appealed to Cash. Through his relationship with her, he was connecting with one of American music's most traditional and influential families, and he enjoyed the cachet that came with that. He loved listening to Mother Maybelle's memories of how the Carter family songs were collected, or discussing history, theology, and literature with June's father, Eck. He reveled in visits to Mesa's Spring, the small mountain community where A.P. Carter had lived and started his collecting. Until the urban folk revival, Mother Maybelle and her singing daughters languished in semi-obscurity. Helen and Anita were raising children, and although Mother Maybelle still appeared at the Opry, she had no recording contract and was working as a nurse for the elderly. Badly affected by the success of rock and roll, country music had undergone a makeover in which the rough and primitive was being supplanted by the smooth and sophisticated. The fiddle and the auto harp were being replaced by the piano, drums, and even orchestral strings. What became known as the Nashville sound was typified by people like Jim Reeves, Patsy Cline, and Don Gibson, who could take country music and make it sound like pop music. Educated baby boomers reacted against what they considered to be production line pop and sought out music that they found more authentic because it had more human fingerprints on it. They wanted music unsullied by commercial considerations and, consequently, more honest about basic emotions and more attuned to universal needs. The Newport Folk Festival, where folk musicians shared stages and workshop areas with gospel, country, and blues musicians, typified this mood. Mother Maybelle made her Newport debut in 1963 at the invitation of the new Lost City Ramblers. Cash instinctively identified with the folk revival movement. The music that touched his heart most had always been that which was a genuine expression of the joys and travails of life. Music composed out of a surfeit of emotion rather than to fulfill the demands of a newly identified market. Little wonder that he responded so enthusiastically to Bob Dylan's album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, on its release in May 1963. Dylan was drawing water from the same well, citing Hank Williams and Leadbelly among his influences. Cash began writing letters of encouragement to Dylan, and Dylan, who'd been a fan of Cash's music since he had first heard it on the radio in the 1950s, wrote back. Through Gene Ferguson, Columbia's promotion man in Nashville, Cash learned of the work of another New York folk musician, Peter LaFarge. The son of Oliver LaFarge, who was a Pulitzer Prize-winning author and a student of the Navajo people, his songs almost exclusively concerned Native American issues. In fact, LaFarge barely sang. His songs were more like rhythmic recitations over a backing of acoustic guitar and bongo drums, with titles like Johnny Halfbreed, I'm an Indian, I'm an Alien, and Coyote, My Little Brother. LaFarge played at the Gaslight on McDougal Street in Greenwich Village and performed at the 1963 Newport Folk Festival. He presented a very exotic background. He said he had left school to work in rodeos, then served on an aircraft carrier during the Korean War, and later spent time as an amateur boxer, radio announcer, painter, actor, poet, and playwright. And though he also claimed to be part Narragansett Indian, neither his father, Oliver LaFarge, nor his mother, Wandon, had any Indian blood. Johnny wanted more than hillbilly jingle, said LaFarge when trying to explain what had attracted the king of country to Greenwich Village. He was hungry for the depth and truth heard only in the folk field. The secret is simple. Johnny has the heart of a folk singer in the purest sense, and he has a very lovely soul. He's capable of anything he puts his soul and his band-aid heart to, and he's capable of being a folk singer in the very essence of folk truth. He would love to be out from that heavy legend that binds him to hillbilly heaven. In March 1964, Cash recorded The Ballad of Ira Hayes, a track that LaFarge had first recorded in 1961 on a Folkways album, On the Warpath, and re-recorded in 1962 for a Columbia album produced by John Hammond titled Ira Hayes and Other Ballads. Ferguson had thought Cash would like it for two reasons. I knew of John's relationship with the Indians, he says. I also knew that he had served with the American Armed Forces. This song puts these two things together, and I thought John would like it. As it happens, he loved it.